your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond. Welcome back to this week's episode of Alchemy. Super excited to be joined today by Luke Anderson, co-founder of CAN. Luke, awesome to have you on the show.
Hey, Jeff. I know we've been trying to do this for a while, so it's great to finally be here.
Yes. We've been trying to get this going. I know a lot of people are really excited to hear from you. And for everybody that's tuning in right now, unless you're living under a rock, CAN was the first cannabis-infused social tonic beverage on the market, and they're doing some really amazing stuff out there, and have been really excited to finally get Luke on the show. You know, Luke, prior to CAN, you've got a very interesting background. You're the co-founder of Way Out. You were also over at Bain & Company. Just kind of looking at the space, what made you launch CAN? Like, how did you go from what you were doing before to jumping into the cannabis space?
Well, it's funny. I actually was a huge skeptic of cannabis beverage, and it was my co-founder, Jake Bullock, who grew up in Colorado, witnessed legalization from his front doorstep, and obviously seeing what Colorado did in blazing the trail for us, informed how he thought social beverages would get integrated into cannabis long-term. And I was a problematic alcohol drinker. We were both really good friends who drank too much booze. And one hungover Sunday, like 7 years ago, he said, "The future of cannabis is in microdose THC beverages." And I laughed my butt off and said, "You have got to be kidding me. I have my hands full with alcohol. Stoner culture is so stigmatizing and unappealing. I can't even imagine thinking about walking into a dispensary, let alone integrating this into my daily routine." And 5 years later, I had my first two-day-long hangover. And that's when I think your feelings about alcohol change permanently as an adult. You can drink 5 days a week, 10 drinks a night, and still live a reasonably functional, albeit very chaotic, life as a 20-something. But in your 30s, you can't go to work on Monday if you have a big Saturday night and be really good at your job. So I reached back out to him. I was specializing in helping multinational consumer goods companies launch new products and brands on short timelines and shoestring budgets. And I said, "Hey, I know how to be a startup. You've got an idea that I suddenly find interesting. Let's get together and build a pitch deck and see if we can raise $1 million. And if we can convince people to give us $1 million, we'll give it a real go." And that was 3 years ago. And here we are today, nearly 10 million cans later.
That's amazing. Well, yeah, I think that's very interesting as far as, you know, trends are concerned. And, I recently came across this poll, and I think if I remember correctly, it said something like, 45%, of adults in the country, have essentially either reduced or replaced alcohol that they've been drinking with cannabis-related products since the pandemic started, right? So like the last 2 years, I think for all of us has been like this weird, was it 2 years? Was it 1 year? Was it 6 months? But it feels like eternity. And there's this big trend that's happening now that people are really starting to modify their lives based on, products that were never available before. So when you kind of look at your business and, that's kind of, I guess, what really got you involved into it, do you think this is more of a consumer trend, like for the moment, or is it something that you think is really going to stay for a long time?
I mean, it's both. It is a trend to be interested in cannabis beverage. And the trend was started with CBD drinks back in 2018 becoming popular. But, and actually when Jake and I set out to raise the money, we were told no by 90 people before we got our first yes. And everyone said, "I'd do this if this was CBD. CBD drinks are the future." And we almost pivoted the whole business to be a CBD drink company. But both of us just kind of feel like it's mostly overblown placebo, and that CBD in a drink, it's not even really that effective. So we stuck to our guns. We said we only would make a product that we think is not a trend. And that's where I think we landed with CAN. it is not a trend to want to substitute alcohol as a 30 plus year old person. And it's starting to become even appealing for Gen Z millennial type folks in their 20s to do the same. So while cannabinoid beverages are trendy, just like spirulina beverages were trendy 10 years ago, I think that alcohol substitution has been a longstanding desire of consumers. And unfortunately, there's never been a drink that delivers on a buzz that doesn't deliver on a hangover. And so people have just taken breaks from alcohol and then either gone fully sober, if you can commit to that, bless your heart, or they've gone back. And this loving to hate alcohol thing is utterly relatable. And we're the only product on the market that really resonates with people in solving that need.
Yeah. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, when I look back from this past summer, I definitely had a few moments of late nights that involved, you know, too much tequila. And the next morning I was just like, oh, I can't ever do that again. I'm just too old. And so I think a lot of people go through that very similar, you know, mindset when they're trying to go, you know, they want to have a good time with their friends, but we all have big jobs, right? We can't afford to, you know, be out for a half a day or a day, you know, based on a hangover. I told myself I was never going to do that again, but you know how that goes, right?
Well, you say you're never drinking again every time you're hungover and eating ice cream in your bed and like just, you know, spending $30 to not show up at an exercise class. Right. Then you work a tough week and you come back on Friday and you're like, where's my happy hour? Like, right. I need a drink. And What's cool about Can is that we're the first drink that you can actually reach for if you don't want to be hungover the next day and still take the edge off.
Totally. No, it makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, from a, you know, an investor, you know, standpoint, you obviously have included some, you know, pretty prominent, you know, public figures and icons. I know Gwyneth Paltrow, you know, is one of your investors. You know, talk to us a little bit about how you're working with celebrities and really how they're also driving category growth. I know Ellen also talked about your product on the show as well, which I'm sure, you know, lit up your site pretty heavily, right? So talk to us a little bit about that and the excitement around that.
Okay. So when I built the pitch deck with Jake, one of the pages that we put out there that I was really excited about was we want to be the first product that can get the endorsement of a mainstream non-stoner celebrity. Uh-huh. There was always the Snoop Dogg, Seth Rogen, Martha Stewart, Sarah Silverman, and Chelsea Handler have done amazing things to normalize cannabis. But being a stoner has been a part of their brand for a little bit, at least, as a part of their you know, endorsement of products and brands and the overall reform. You know, they're smoking weed on camera and they're having fun, and it's something that's expected of them as people. But there's never been a Gwyneth Paltrow level person who has put their name behind a cannabis brand, and we were really, really proud to have the first. Actually, it's funny, I Gwyneth and I have a personal history. She was my babysitter when I was 2 years old.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I know it sounds super weird, but my mom hired her because Blythe Danner was like, she wants to get her own phone line and I want to raise her right and make her earn her money. And so she was my babysitter for like, you know, a while when I was in New York. And I hadn't seen her or talked to her for 25 years and showed up to Goop to pitch her. And I was like, remember me? I'm that kid that you used to babysit for. And she was like, that is really funny. And we had a good laugh about it. And then she said, no, I don't want to invest in your silly weed company. And I was devastated.
Oh my God.
And I thought that we were going to make it happen because, you know, why wouldn't you want to invest in the kid that you used to babysit's drug company? But, you know, she's a smart businesswoman and the market was not legitimized and our revenue was non-existent and she wanted to wait. So, as soon as Gwyneth came out publicly, actually Ruby Rose was the first celebrity that came out publicly and she's a queer icon and became very famous with Orange is the New Black. And she and Gwyneth are managed by the same team. And so they both were the first two people that came out and said, this is totally not weird. And it had been incredibly transformative for us as a business.
I think your dog's excited too.
Ronnie! Yeah, sorry, my dog really likes to be a guest on podcasts.
I could tell. It's all right. We're all inclusive here.
So anyway, Ronnie's actually also been instrumental in earning in celebrity endorsements. So I'll get to that later. Yeah. But yeah, Gwyneth eventually said yes a second time after I had another really, really famous Oscar-winning actress actually decline at the 1 yard line, but I had sort of oversold it to my investors and said like, oh my God, I've got someone who's won an Oscar and is really big in mainstream. And I had a board meeting in a week and then she backed out. I'm not going to tell you who it was, but she backed out at the last minute and I freaked out and I called Gwyneth and I said, come on, take a second look, please. This is evolving. We're growing. We're, you know, doubling every quarter. Just give it a go. Mm-hmm. And she said, look, I just don't like that there's so much sugar in it. And I'm like, well, we have a no sugar version now. And she said, done deal. So
amazing.
So getting someone like her on board was really, really difficult, but it has proven invaluable because when she puts her mark on something, it sends a signal to the people that watched her talk about it on CNBC. And they say, wait a minute, is cannabis not that weird? And by the way, is THC the new CBD? Like, was CBD the thing that we all thought was interesting, but maybe just isn't cutting it? And should we be looking at approachable doses of THC when we think about normalizing cannabis consumption? So it's really been a brand awareness and a category legitimacy play. They have louder mouthpieces than I do. They have helped propel our brand so that we have a cult following of people who are introduced to can by them, but then stay because they love the product and can't stop drinking it. And the reason that these celebrities are willing to invest is they can't stop drinking it themselves. I'm constantly refilling their fridges and it's been a delight to get creative with them on projects that help further evolve our brand. But it all comes from a place of just loving the product. And that's why we have so much confidence in doing what we do.
Awesome. Makes a lot of sense. Now, I think, you know, obviously with all of these, you know, great icons and celebrities kind of diving in and supporting the brand, you know, you guys obviously have also been getting a ton of coverage, especially on the creative side. You know, I know recently, you know, Adweek actually said, hey, you know, mainstream marketers, you guys have a lot to learn from these guys. And I think it was particularly around your out-of-home Pride celebration campaign. So what was the thinking behind the campaign? And if you can share maybe even some of the results, you know, which you actually achieved with that, would be awesome.
Yeah, Pride was huge for us. I mean, Jake and I are both queer. And as a queer-founded company, you know, you have to stand up for the community in an authentic way. Every big corporation slaps a rainbow logo for the month of June and calls it a day. And as soon as July 1st rolls around, they're like, okay, forget it. Like, we hate the gays and we're taking money from Republicans suddenly. So it means a lot to us to use the brand platform to make sure that intersectional queer communities are you know, visible. And drag queens are some of the most marginalized people, especially you know, women of color or queer people of color who are drag performers. You know, they have been outcasts of society for so long.
Sure.
And with the popularity of RuPaul's Drag Race as one vehicle, have become mainstream stars in their own right recently. And what's funny is, you know, Black trans women are the people who were originally normalizing queer culture and standing up, you know, in events like Stonewall and you know, pushing back when the police are trying to shut down underground queer activity and saying, no, we're people, like treat us like people. And so I have been a big fan of the evolution of drag culture and it's helped me be comfortable in my queer identity. And so I met Marco Monroe, who's Lizzo's stylist, and a big can fan. And he's a brilliant, brilliant artist. And mm-hmm. and has styled, you know, he did Nicole Byer at the Emmys. Like he's just a stylist at the peak of his game right now. And I had him over for dinner and I said, hey, like, I loved the Fanta girls growing up. Can has amazing flavors and colors and an expressive brand voice. What if we took some drag performers and then dressed them up like the Fanta girls in our three iconic flavors, grapefruit, rosemary, blood orange, cardamom, lemon, lavender. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, I'm in a creative collective with Simone and Gigi Good, two of the most famous drag queens in the world right now who get, you know, they're doing fashion ads for Moschino and Louis Vuitton and just like, you know, getting invited to the Met Gala. And it's, if there's anyone in the queer community that we would dream of working with, it would be people like Marco and the House of Avalon, which is this queer collective. So Marco said, yeah, we're into it. Let's just make it like 90s fashion and let's try to make it editorial and highbrow. And so they took, you know, 90s models, Christy Turlington and Cindy Crawford and Claudia Schiffer, you know, photos taken by Richard Avedon for Chanel and Versace and said, let's mash this up. Let's do Fanta girls as drag queens. It's 2021. Like, this is pride. And the response was insane. We did like very close to our first $1 million month in June, up from like half as big the month before. And the response was not just like, oh, I love Can. It was crazy. We had dispensary owners calling us saying, you guys are just putting naked ladies on billboards. Like, what do you think this is? Like, and we're talking to the dispensary shoppers and we're saying, or the dispensary owners, and we're saying, those are biological men.
Right.
And then like they're stunned and they're like, oh, wait, I understand queer culture. And that's just, it's just a big, it's a paradigm shift that we're just happy to be a part of in some small way. Just, you know, when Tim Cook was, you know, the big gay CEO, like it was kind of hush hush. And right. And we want to make it clear to everybody that you can be gay in business. You can be as queer and as dragged out as you want in real life and have legitimacy and be on a 60-foot billboard in Hollywood.
Well, listen, I love that you guys are doing that. And I love that you guys are also, you know, pushing important boundaries that people need to see. You know, I think also, you know, on the flip side, you know, when you think about, you know, marketing on social channels, right? Like Instagram, Facebook, Google, like they don't let you do anything when it comes to paid social when you're talking about cannabis. And that's obviously a big issue. You know, I think you guys in particular, you found some pretty smart ways to, you know, overcome some of these restrictions. And I know that, you know, you had recently done a very interesting ASMR inspired social campaign that didn't use any of your logos and didn't use any product shots, which I thought was pretty genius. So maybe for everyone who's listening now, you know, give them a little bit of background on that campaign.
Yeah, what's funny is that campaign was not commercially successful at all, but we were one of the first cannabis brands that actually successfully ran paid Instagram ads that didn't get shut down.
Right.
And we said, hey, let's like demonstrate the feeling of drinking a can, which is just feeling a little bit good. We partnered with one of our early investors, Red Antler, the agency that did Casper and Allbirds branding. Mm-hmm. And they said, yeah, let's take some beautiful product photography and then let's imagine it without the product and let's see if that's compelling enough to get people to want to learn more. So we collected, you know, a lot of emails, but we actually pissed a lot of people off because they were like, I thought this was like feathers, or I thought I was going to get a reindeer floating with a balloon.
Yeah.
And you're trying to sell me drugs. So, you know, bumps in the road, like it didn't drive a ton of revenue, but you know, we're doing another paid digital ad this holiday season, and I think it's going to be gangbusters because we have had one cycle and we know what we can do as a brand with star power and creativity to just get people into the fold. So look out for some fun stuff from us coming up.
Cool. That was my next question for you. Like, give us a little sneak peek. So thank you for that. And then I think, you know, before we go into some quick fire questions, I think just one additional thought that I had You know, as we're, you know, both very intricately involved in the cannabis space, you know, I think compliance obviously is at the forefront about, I don't know, everything that we do when it comes to marketing, when it comes to packaging and labeling, when it comes to delivery. And you guys, you know, have done a really great job on a, you know, pretty beautifully designed brand, and also, you know, the packaging around the brand. And I'm just curious from you, you know, have you guys run into any trouble as you were developing that when it came to packaging and labeling compliance?
I mean, it's tough because if you were to make cannabis look like consumer packaged goods without warning labels and restrictions, I mean, look at Canada. Like, the drinks don't even look like drinks. And the reason why that market isn't taking off is, like, nobody wants to hold something that looks like a USB container and say, this is my social drink. So, you know, we're lucky in California, you can do cool stuff, but in every state we're in, and we're in five states now, the drink looks different based on local regulations, which makes it really hard to build a brand. But when your packaging design is beautiful and every detail is thought through, then the brand begins to have value, and you get to see these thin geometric pieces of line artwork that are just so can, and you can say, yeah, that's can, like, that's not something else.
Right.
And brands at the end of the day, as this industry legitimizes, the ones that have the details, like, you know, I'm a big fan of Sunday School, Drew Martin, Sonder, Rose Delights, you know, these super premium and very, very highbrow products with super expensive packaging, you know, those will end up being the ones that win the biggest if they can navigate scaling in the near term.
Awesome. Well, you know, you guys keep up the incredible work and keep breaking boundaries and doing fun things. And, you know, it sounds like you guys are really, you know, having a great time with the brand while building the brand at the same time. So I think that's the most important thing to think about. And then, Luke, you know, on the show, we always talk about business in the beginning, and then we just kind of end the show with some quick fire questions. And lately, I've been playing this game called This or That, which is super easy. I give you two answers. You tell me which one you like better. Are you ready?
Ready as ever.
All right. Flip-flops or sneakers?
Sneakers, although I'm kind of getting into Birkenstocks lately because that's gay culture in Venice.
I was going to say, is that like a Berkshire's thing?
No.
You know? Maybe
the gays,
not.
The gays in the west side of Los Angeles told me that if I started wearing Birkenstocks, then I would be cooler. And I, you know, I listened to the gays on the west side of LA.
That's so funny. I don't think that trend has hit the East Coast, though. So we'll have to look out for that. Okay. Summer travel destination, Fire Island or Provincetown?
Fire Island. Provincetown is like Coachella, and Fire Island is like Burning Man. Everyone goes to Coachella for 5 to 7 years and then gets a little tired of how commercial it is and how expected it is.
Yeah.
You see a lot of old people at Burning Man for a reason.
It's a good analogy. I like both personally. So tattoos or piercings?
Tattoos. I pierced my nipple, and then a very famous photographer in Los Angeles told me at a party, you would be infinitely more chic without this nipple piercing. And so I currently don't have any piercings, although sometimes my ear has a lightning bolt in it when I'm feeling like I need some energy. But I have 5 tattoos. One can tattoo, math equation, tandem bicycle, a detailed map of Massachusetts. I guess it's 4 tattoos, but I'm looking to get my 5th. Maybe Mariah Carey from the Emancipation of Mimi album on my left arm.
I actually have myself. I mean, I have too many to count now, but my entire left arm is, I mean, I pretty much have a sleeve now. And it's been fun. I never in a million years would have thought I'd be, you know, all tatted up on one side, but it's been fun. Okay. Color wise, bright colors or neutral colors?
Oh, it's tough. I love, I love bright and neutral, but I care a lot about the finish. And I think that anything that looks matte, so muted, is really, really in right now. glossy is not, but bright matte can be really powerful if used well. And I think that I'll say bright because of that.
Awesome. Okay. When it comes to watching TV, Game of Thrones or Squid Games?
My husband would say Game of Thrones. I've actually not seen either. I saw one episode of Squid Game, but apparently Gus
Kennedy... Was that the first episode?
Yeah, I saw the first episode, but Gus Kenworthy made me stop. He's one of our investors and a gay icon.
I've met him many times in Fire Island.
I mean, he's literally the greatest.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He is. He's also pretty he's pretty savvy when it comes to pop culture. And he said that I'm not allowed to watch it unless I switch to the subtitles version where they're speaking. Is it Korean, right?
Yeah, I tried. I couldn't. I'm not very good with following subtitles and watching it at the same time. So I watch the dub version. But you can't just watch the first episode because it's so different. You know, it's like you got to watch the first three or four.
All right. So Squid Game it is.
All right, cool. All right. Final question. Fire pit or fireplace?
West Coast fire pit, East Coast fireplace. I didn't really give you a clear answer on any of these. but I live in LA and then sometimes in New England. And I think LA fire pit days are some of the most beautiful and it makes like the tiny harshness of an LA winter that much more tolerable. And then in Boston, you got to be indoors with the fire all season long.
I love it. Well, Luke, listen, really appreciate you coming on. Thanks for the wisdom. Thanks for also all the creative advice and, you know, keeping us abreast of trends. So, you know, it's been really fun. Everyone, Luke Anderson, co-founder of Can, and we'll be looking for that holiday campaign that you guys are going to be launching. Thanks for coming on.
All right. Talk to you later.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.